since it was not a full deck, they did not have to pay federal tax on the decks. Yet they could be sold as 52 cards. They were sold for 10 cents a pack. The wrappers would grab 52 cards, take a piece of cellophane, and lick the two ends to seal it. There was a lot of competition between the workers to get to the cellophane because they were paid by the amount wrapped. My mother said they received about 35 cents a gross. Since what they were doing was not completely legal, the workers were locked in from 9 to 5. My mother earned about $1 to $1.50 the first day. She earned $2.50 to $3 thereafter as she got accustomed to her work. This was pretty good, even for a college graduate in 1935. She left after 2 weeks.
I don't know.
Okay. I got this from my father, Irving Fagins. This is about how my grandfather came over to America. There were 4 boys in his family, and he... I think it was about 1906, around then. And his older brother, Max, came over first, and then he got a job in a hat factory in New York. And in a few years, he sent for my grandfather, and he also got a job in a hat factory through my through his brother. And they worked together for a few years, and they sent for their next brother, and he worked in the hat factory too. And then they sent for their youngest brother, and they decided that since they all worked in hat factory and they weren't particularly skilled and they were still making enough money, they would try and train him for a better job. And so they trained him to be a linotyper in a Jewish newspaper, which is very highly skilled in those days. And then my grandfather met somebody in the factory who lived in Danbury, Connecticut, and he went there to get another job. And he met my grandmother, and then they got a house, and all their relatives came to live with them because, you know, they were the only people who had a house then. And all the brothers lived with them at one time or another, and then my father's grandparents, and then they sent for my grandfather's parents, who are still in Poland, and they came over, and the whole family was living with them at one time. And I have some other stories. That my father worked in a garment shop one summer when he was 14, and he was an all-around helper. He delivered coats, and it was a coat store, coat shop, and he would deliver coats to the warehouse, and he'd wheel the racks around the streets. And then he'd go around when the day was over, and he'd have a magnet, and he'd pick up all the pins that the people had dropped during the day. And at another time, he would have to turn belts inside out. And to do this, you had to have a wire hanger. And when they sewed the belt, they'd sew it inside out. And you'd have to put the belt up through the top, and you couldn't push it through. And if you push it through, you know, you get a hole in the material, and you'd be some of your salary would be taken off, and you'd pull it through, and then you'd hook it on something, and you'd pull it down, and you'd pull it, you know, the right way. And my father remembers that the first day he ever did this, he went through about half of them. All the workers were very mad because they were being paid by the piece, and they'd have to do each belt over again if they got a hole in it. Just a minute. He worked in Macy's for about 5 or 6 years, and he was a stock clerk there. And then he became a shipping clerk. And he thought that the conditions were very unfair there, and he was only getting about $12 a week. And so he went and talked to a few other people there, and he said that he thought that they should start a union. And the other people agreed, and together they started a union, the Department Store Workers Union, and my father's now a charter member of that union. And then he was telling me about the union my grandfather belonged to, which was the Federation of North American Hatters. And during one time in the 1930s, no, in the 1920s, they had a big strike, and whenever they went on picket lines, the police would come and break it up, and they practically beat everybody up because they wouldn't leave. And my father remembers my grandfather coming home every night, and he'd be beat up. This is from my grandfather, Dr. Simon Miller. In about 1907, my grandfather's uncle came over to America for a cure-all for his bad feet. In 1908, he came back home to Hungary, just in time to see my grandfather receiving an invitation from the government, as he called it, to join the army. My grandfather didn't want to join the army because he came from a family of rabbis, and they didn't want to join the army at all. So my grandfather's uncle convinced him to come to America. Well, he went to Germany to take a boat, and he was ready to buy a ticket, and he found he didn't have enough money. So he sent the letter back home for more money, and by mistake the postman gave him twice as much. My grandfather thought for a minute. He wasn't sure if he should return the extra money, but then he realized that if he did, he wouldn't have enough to buy the ticket, so he just took it. And when he got to America, for years afterwards, he was always afraid that he would be deported, and finally he sent back the money. When my grandfather got to Ellis Island, he was sort of surprised to see that all the first-class people on the boat could get off while he had to stay overnight because it was a holiday. The next day, they were all rushed through very, very quickly. He went to stay with one of his family in Harlem for 2 weeks until the high holidays were over, and then he moved to my grandmother's house to work in a printer's shop. He set the print. This is how he learned to speak English, and this is how he learned to read. He learned very quickly, and he got a lot of money. My grandmother didn't like my grandfather at first because he had her room in her house and her place at the table, and he always got the best cut of meat when they had it. And she said she would never speak to him again, but she changed her mind. Then one of my grandfather's cousins convinced him that Philadelphia was better than New York, so he moved there, and he moved in with another one of my grandfather's cousins, and he started to teach a Hebrew school. He thought that he would be able to learn something in Philadelphia, but he soon found out that he wasn't learning anything, and the children he was teaching didn't learn very easily either. So he decided to go back to New York. And then he married my grandmother, and that's all.
About 1900, my grandfather was drafted into the Austrian army, and he was in that army for 3 years. And when he came to America, he brought his German pistol along with him. And he opened up a store by the Bowery. And he slept with the gun under his pillow. And one night, a robber broke in. And my grandfather got up, and he fired a shot. And the guy went running. That's
all. My grandfather, he was born on the Lower East Side, and he had to go to work when he was about 10 or 12 years old, and he supported the family. And instead of the family taking care of him and maybe getting an allowance, he had to pay the family sort of like for his rent and board. And he also had to support his older brother. Well, one of his jobs that he got was in a printing press, and you went there and you had to go down a flight of steps, and then there was a morgue, and you had to walk around the morgue, and all the way in the back, behind the morgue, was a printing press. That's it.
Well, I got this from my grandfather, George Sherry, and this is about his family, his father, actually. He came from the Ukraine, Minsk, was the town. And he beat up a policeman because of anti-Semitism. In the old country, he drove a buggy. And in America, he was a presser of suits. 4 years after my grandfather's father came over, he came over in 1913. They came on a ship and landed at Ellis Island. They didn't have any money. And they spoke Russian and Yiddish. They lived on Avenue B between 13th and 14th Street. And, well, they thought they escaped anti-Semitism, but they really hadn't. And on the if you walked on the next block, you would be beat up by the Italians and Irish. And there were occasionally block fights. And then the next one is for my grandmother, Sylvia Sherry. She also came from Ukraine, Minska. And every year, another person from the family came over. And they traveled second class. They came to Ellis Island in 1910. And my grandmother was 11 and a half. They didn't have any money. But they left because of the Tsar. And they found no discrimination there. They lived on 3rd Street between 2nd and 1st Avenue. Oh, the family had 7 children. And when my great-grandfather came over here, he was a cutter of man's caps. He worked in the millinery business. And in the old country, he was a cantor. He spoke Russian, Yiddish, and Hebrew. And it was in the 1940s when my grandmother came over.
My grandmother, she was born in... She was born in England, and one of the cries which she always says every once in a while is, "Watermelon, watermelon, a penny a slice right off the ice, watermelon." There are a lot of others, but when my grandparents were living in Brooklyn, my mother, I think, was very young then. They were going over their Friday night services, and so suddenly this man burst into the house, and he says, "Look, I'm a cousin." And so then, about 5 minutes later, in comes a policeman, and so he said, "Who is this man over here?" So my grandmother turns around, and he says, "He's our cousin." And so the policeman leaves, and so then the man says, "Thank you very much. If you ever get into any trouble, I'll help you." Well, anyway, about 2 years later, they had some things stolen from them. It wasn't very important, but they decided to see what this man would do. And so they found, they looked for him, and they found him walking on the street, and they told him. And so he went around to all of his friends, and about 2 days later, they got all their stolen stuff back. Another thing which happened, this was also in Brooklyn, they were on the top floor, and bottom floor were the landlords, and they're very nice people. Well, this was also on Friday night, and so this was, and there were no lights on because they were Jewish and they didn't light any lights, and they didn't know anybody that would turn on or off the lights. So very dark, and suddenly they hear knocks on the back stairs, and they're very scared. And so my grandmother was just there alone. My grandfather was out on a business trip or something, and so she was very scared, and she locked the door, and she locked both doors. Well, anyway, in the morning, this had happened all night. She'd been up all night. She told the landlord, and the landlord said, "Oh, these are some people, friends of ours. They didn't know where we lived."
This was told to me by my mother, Laura Green, and, my great-grandfather came over to America about 1890, and he sent back money about a year later for my great-grandmother and her children to come over. Well, great-grandmother got tickets for the ship. And that night she had a bad dream, and she dreamt that the ship sunk. So she canceled her tickets, and she waited. And then she tried again. And the next time she had the same dream. So she canceled the tickets again. Well, finally, she got the tickets again, and she went, even though she had the dream again. And on the way to America, sure enough, there was something wrong with the ship. And it would have sunk, except there was an engineer on board, and one of the passengers, and if he wasn't there, he fixed the ship. And they made it, and they got to Castle Garden, and then they went up to live in the Bronx. And